This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, push that button.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
So there's a new bill working its way through the state capitol that tackles homeless encampments, and it's going to put Democrats in a really tricky position because Democrats say they care about kids so much, so now they're going to actually have to go on record to see how much they care about kids. State Senator Curtis King, he's a Republican who represents the 14th district that includes Glenwood, Lyle, Goldendale. He's pushing a bill that would ban homeless encampments from within 1,000 feet of schools. Now, that's about 3 to 4 city blocks, and it's the same amount of feet for weed stores. Now, we say we're going to push weed stores away from students because somehow it's going to get them to smoke weed. It's a ludicrous position. But in this case, when we're talking about homelessness, it makes a little bit more sense, according to Senator King, because he's saying to Como TV's Matt Markovich, hey, I'm doing this for safety.
They're not all bad, but there's no control. Buckets of needles being found, contamination everywhere, feces, you name it. Do we want that next to one of our schools? I said no.
And I think most people would say no. Now, for Senator Phil Fortunato, another Republican from Auburn, he says the legislation is quite reasonable.
I'm in total agreement with you that we need to address homelessness, we need to do all that stuff. But this simply says you can't have an encampment within 1,000 feet. That seems like a reasonable thing.
So what would end up happening is if you've got the encampment there, presumably police officers would come up and close it down, say you can't be here, and this would impact everyone across Washington State. Now, David Crum is not supportive of this. He's a resident at Camp Second Chance in West Seattle. He's homeless. He tells Como TV that not all homeless camps are bad.
There's always a small chirping minority of people who want to demonize the homeless. You show me spread garbage. You show me rigs in an organized camp. You can't do it. It's not going to happen.
Okay, so that statement is absolutely incorrect, unless he's talking about encampments that are sanctioned by the city, which are not housed near schools. His position that this is demonizing the homeless is absolutely absurd. We know for a fact that these homeless encampments are that the ones that aren't sanctioned, they're dirty. We know for a fact that in the homeless population, there is a large number of folks who are dealing with mental illness, that are dealing with drug addiction and alcohol addiction, and they are going to be negatively impacting the schools in which they're near. They're negatively impacting the communities they're in. This whole idea that the vast majority of these encampments, totally safe, totally clean. No, they're not. Where do they go to the bathroom? They don't have running water. They don't have plumbing. They don't have electricity. Don't tell me that there's no trash around these encampments. Take a walk around any neighborhood that has these encampments, any neighborhood whatsoever. And what you'll end up seeing is that they're filled with trash, that neighborhoods that were once clean are no longer. Neighborhoods that once did not have to deal with all of this nonsense now have to deal with it. So don't tell me this is about demonizing anybody. It's not. It's about cleaning up our cities and making it safe for our kids who are going to schools. Thomas, of the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance, she says the legislation would ban all homeless encampments.
Banning people from existing in public space is not a solution.
The reality is that...
No, okay. I'm sorry. This is just stupid. It's stupid. It's a stupid comment. There's no other way to talk about that. No one's saying you can't exist in a space. They're saying you can't illegally camp out near a school. You can exist wherever it is you want. We can't take a law out and say we're banning your existence. Let's stop pretending we're talking about existence. We're talking about illegal camping. You still exist as a human being. You're still suffering. And unfortunately, people like Michelle don't want to do enough to get these people off the streets and into housing, even though she represents the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance. Can we just stop with this absurd language? We talk about demonizing the homeless. How about stop demonizing lawmakers who are trying to come up with solutions to problems that maybe you don't like, but you're pretending they're the evil people.
That when you're trying to ban these encampments from 1,000 feet from a school or early learning center, you're talking about banning them everywhere.
No, you're not. No, you're not. That is just flatly incorrect. You're not talking about banning them everywhere. I live in an apartment that has no school nearby. So don't tell me that right now in a studio, we are over 1,000 feet away from a nearby high school. So don't tell me that we're banning them everywhere. And you know what? Frankly, I'm okay if we want to ban these encampments, period. especially because we have, at least in Western Washington, we have enough resources to help the people who are out on the street. We do. We have enough beds. You may not like the bed, but that's kind of a you problem. Antonio Giannata with the Columbia Legal Services tells Como TV the legislation would also affect homeless kids. Let's hear how over the top he is.
Children who are experiencing homelessness can go to a school, but they can't live near a school. And I'm not sure that's a message the legislature wants to send.
You're not sure it's the message you want to send? You want the legislature to send the message that we're okay, children who are homeless, that you're sleeping out on the streets? Is that really what you're saying? Is that what you're saying? Because that's an absurd position. I would love the legislature saying, you know what, kids, we're not okay with you sleeping on the streets. We want to get you out of that horrible situation. We want to show you some compassion and put you in a shelter, connect you with family members. And let's also stop pretending that kids who are living on the streets are going to school as much as we're pretending, as much as Antonio wants you to believe. Because when we're talking about homeless kids, generally speaking, we're defining them as kids who don't have a traditional home. They're couch surfing. Some of them are living in cars. So let's not just pretend that we've got a whole bunch of like eighth graders who are living out in these encampments very close to school, and they happen to encamp there because they want to be able to have a smaller commute to get to their classes on time. This is just absolutely absurd. Now, the reason why this is going to be difficult for Democrats is Democrats say they care about kids, but they also say they care about the homeless. They cannot, with a straight face, claim that they care about all these kids who are going to school if they're allowing some dangerous encampments to camp out near them. Not all encampments are dangerous, but a lot of them are. Now, if you want to go ahead and pick and choose the ones you think are dangerous, go for it, Democrats. But something tells me you're not even going to do that. And so in the meantime, we've got this legislation that makes total sense. And unfortunately, it's not going to go anywhere, because when the Democrats say they care about your kids, let's be clear about what they really care about. They care about virtue signaling, and not going after these encampments is good enough for them for their progressive virtue signaling. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Who needs TMZ?
Harvey Levin of TMZ is now doing some defense for the story that they originally put out, because they were the ones who broke the story of Jussie Smollett, the actor from Empire. They were the ones who put out the statement that he had been beat up and that he had been the victim of a vicious attack coming from Trump supporters who absolutely loathe gay people and black people. And of course, that story was a complete hoax. Now, Harvey Levin went on Fox News and he was talking with Bill Hemmer, and they talked about whether or not he bears any responsibility for putting this information out there. And Harvey Levin says, look, I just reported what the police told us, what the police were told by Jussie Smollett. I don't necessarily believe it.
I didn't say I believed it. What we said was, this is what Jussie said. I never said I believed it. We reported what Jussie said happened. I can tell you that from the beginning, police had suspicions. We knew about the suspicions, but they, on the record, were saying, okay, we consider him
understood.
A victim.
And so at that point, Hemmer presses a little bit more, saying, hey, did the police actually confirm your reporting?
You had Jussie's version of events.
Right.
Did you run that by police in Chicago before you went online with it?
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, they said we consider him a victim of this crime. And they maintained that for almost 2 weeks.
So this is an interesting storyline here, because I'm not going to pretend that TMZ should be treated the exact same way as a CNN or Fox News or an MSNBC. TMZ is a gossip website, right? They have a gossipy TV show that people watch. I find it to be insufferable, but I'm not going to judge them by the exact same standards. Now, to Levin's point, TMZ put it out there saying this is what Jussie Smollett claimed. And they also followed up by talking about some of what the cops were saying. So I think they actually did a reasonable job in simply presenting what was being presented as fact. They weren't calling it fact. They say Jussie Smollett alleged this. I think they actually did it reasonably well, and they kept up with the story, including frequent positions of, okay, this is now what they're saying. This is now what cops are saying. This is now what some people suspect. So I'm not quite at that point where I'm going to jump at TMZ, mostly because I view TMZ the same way I view the National Enquirer or Radar Online and all these places. These are not legitimate sources of news, although I do tend to believe them when celebrities die, weirdly, because I think they get that stuff right, particularly in the Michael Jackson stuff. So I'm kind of curious from your perspective, if you want to send me a text message on the Numb Better Tax Resolution hotline, 1-800-465-8770. Do you think TMZ did the appropriate thing in how do you think they basically handled this appropriately? 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. This hour, by the way, is brought to you by You Build It. Don't forget, go behind the scenes of the show. Head on over to facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. Hit the follow button. Of course, you can also follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. Just search for the name Jason Rants. It's spelled J-A-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
A new bill working its way in Olympia has to do with mandating a certain subject be taught in high schools all across the state. Joining me in studio with more is our friend Hannah Scott from our sister station, Cairo Radio. Hannah, hello.
Good morning. Afternoon. Sorry.
Yeah, what are you doing?
A long day for me. with this bill, right now, our state, the law is, it strongly encourages all public high schools to teach, include education about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. What this proposal would do would also strongly encourage middle and junior high schools to also include that education. And then there's a path forward down the line, I believe, by 2022 for the state school superintendent to come up with the possible proposal on mandating this for classrooms across across the state. So first, right now, though, the bill is coming from Republican Ann Rivers, and she explains why.
It's so very important because if we think about history, we know that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And I think there's probably no finer example in the history of humankind than this as being something that should never be repeated.
Kamiak High School teacher Brent Anderson told lawmakers he already teaches this to his high school students. He also has an elective for students specifically about the Holocaust, a special class that he teaches as well. And he said this is extremely important, not just for the history of this.
As an educator, I believe that studying the Holocaust is an educational imperative. Though the Holocaust seems incomprehensible, it is not, and that's why our students must engage in the study. The Holocaust opens up truth about the capacity of humans for not only hatred, but indifference to their neighbors. It helps students engage in critical thinking about the role of scapegoating, greed, and racism in what was a watershed moment for humanity. To ask what difference that can and should be made to help a democratic society function and protect all people, not just people like them.
His point is well taken and totally valid. It's incredibly important to teach this. Is there any indication that schools are not teaching the Holocaust?
Not to middle and junior high school students.
So, but that's all that this is about is at this point, this bill would make a recommendation, not a mandate, but down the line, they might make a mandate. Is there any indication from the teachers who are in middle school and elementary school why they're not teaching the Holocaust?
Nobody came out to speak against this bill yesterday. I know
because it's incredible. No one's going to speak against this bill because it's a bad look. But I'm wondering if part of the reason is it just might be a little bit too much for a young kid to learn.
Age appropriation is definitely an issue, and even when
I say
supporters,
that as a Jew, I mean this is incredibly important. I don't like this bill. If it becomes a mandate, I'm fine if you strongly recommend, that's fine. But it's just, there's an appropriate time to teach this to children, and there's an appropriate way to teach this to children. Now, I will give deference to the experts at what time they should be teaching that, because I have no idea. But I don't necessarily trust the quote-unquote experts on how they teach this, because the way they talk about the Holocaust might be different than I would as a Jew, or Jewish organizations might want people to talk about this. And at that point, is the government the right person, the right thing to get involved in how we should teach something like this?
So I want to make very, very clear what this does. The bill does a few things. First of all, like I said, it would do what we currently have for high schools and strongly suggest that these educators do this. Then it also directs the state school superintendent for 1 year. Gives him 1 year to come up with guidelines. He has to talk with nonprofits like the Holocaust Center for Humanity and other Jewish advocate agencies to come up with the best practices for this. And then those schools who are going to go ahead and teach this have to follow those best practices. It would be the same process then after those best practices are in. There'd be a report.
Can I just real quickly, because we're talking about the head of education, Chris Reich.
Right.
And that's assuming he's in that position if this bill gets that far. Chris Reichtel is the same superintendent who compared the current Trump administration to Nazi Germany. That's part of why I don't want this in the hands of some educators. And just remember the tweet that he put out that I called him out on, and then he blocked this Jewish host because he doesn't like a Jew talking to him about the Nazi Germany. Please go back and read your history. The rise of Nazi Germany looked exactly like this current administration. I don't want that guy in charge of figuring out how to talk about Nazi Germany because he's a hack. He's an ideologue. He doesn't really care about Jews. He'll happily exploit the loss of life under Nazi Germany for his own political gain, but I don't want him in charge of this. That's my point.
And I take what my understanding is that there's some checks and balances there. I do know in its current form, I don't know the specifics, but they are asking for some amendments to this. I'm not exactly sure what those are. That'll play out as this moves forward. Went through a Senate panel hearing yesterday. We'll see where it goes from there.
See where it goes. For updates, go to mynorthwest.com, our sister website. Hannah Scott, thanks for stopping by.
You bet.
Jason Rancho, it's time to find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So this story is actually kind of crazy. A Philadelphia real estate investor says a home that he was visiting because they wanted to potentially own it and flip it, put it back on the market, make a whole bunch of money off of it. They found that a part of the house was actually booby-trapped. In fact, the booby trap was on their stairwell, and it was attached to a swinging knife. Ekram Uyelsaller says he and his team were looking at this house back in January when one of his coworkers saw a little wire, a small wire, you can barely see it, but he did, thankfully, on the staircase. And if you were to trip over this line, a fast-moving knife would hit you right in the face. It's insane. Taped to the end of a crutch was a large knife pointing right at where the head of a person walking up the stairs would have been. Now, they caught it on tape once they realized what it was, and it was kind of weird the way they did it. It almost sounds staged, but I don't think it was staged. So they walk into the house, they get the camera rolling, someone gets like a stick, and everyone is far away from the actual knife, and they trigger the wire, and then this happens.
Right here. Ooh.
Okay. There is something about folks who have sort of East Coast accents that make me always wonder whether or not they're as open and honest with what it is they're saying and not being dramatic. But for them, I mean, the video looks real. This guy, the real estate agent, he went on Chicago 5 and said, sometimes you come across these things. Okay.
You know, a lot of these houses you go in that are shells and vacant, and especially with the gentrification going on in Philadelphia, with the housing market, you know, growing at a rapid pace, people want to keep on investing. You know, you're going to come across these things.
No, you're not going to come across these things. Let's not normalize and pretend that it's happening all the time, that you walk into a potential investment property and you walk into a booby trap that is going to kill you. Now, the question is, who set up this booby trap and why they set it up, right? Because if part of the reason why they set it up was to kill someone who's a gentrifier or who they blame for the gentrification of a neighborhood, well, that is quite alarming. Right? This whole idea that gentrification is always bad, that anyone who comes into a neighborhood and tries to spruce things up by putting money into rental properties and then sometimes jacking up some of the rent, that's evil, and it's necessary that not only do we stop it, but the only way we can stop it is by killing someone. This was legit. This was serious. I mean, just think for a moment, unless it was a short person, what would happen if they didn't find this wire and they didn't realize it beforehand, ended up tripping on the wire and then triggering this knife to come down and stab them in the head. It's actually insane. I hope that this story ends up being a hoax because it is pretty alarming. And let's not pretend that you just come across these things. It happens all the time. No, it doesn't. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Now it's time to find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
So I'm not going to lie. I'm a little disappointed in some of you. I'm not going to lie. Producer Tom's in my ear telling me, don't tell the audience that you're upset with them. No, I'm sorry. I reject you. I'm a little upset. Because we told you a couple weeks ago that both the Seattle Police Department and the Marysville Police Department, they were participating in the Polar Plunge. The Polar Plunge is jumping in to the Sound in freezing cold temperatures, all so they can raise awareness for Special Olympics Washington. And I like to back the blue whenever I can. And in this case, not only did I get to back the blue as they were raising money for the Polar Plunge, I also got to back Special Olympics, which is an amazing organization locally and nationally. But here's the deal. You guys didn't take me up on my request to raise some money for them. But I have some good news. The good news is, because of the snow, they ended up postponing the Polar Plunge from February 9th to February 23rd. At Alki Beach. That is this Saturday. So the good news is, for all the people who decided not to donate even $5 to the cause, you have the opportunity right now. Text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770. I want you to donate. If you have $5, $10, $50, $100, whatever it is, please back the team, the SPD and the Marysville PD. They're getting together, raising money for the Special Olympics Washington. It's a great cause. Text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770. Do it now, please. I would really appreciate it. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770, KTTH and 94.5 FM. On the Greater East Side, he was thrust into a national conversation about gun rights and school safety after the Stoneman Douglas school shooting just over a year ago. And he helped fill a void that was much necessary. The void that we weren't really having any conservative students speak up. Kyle Kashoff is in studio. He's set for a speech later tonight at Henry M. Jackson High School, which I will be a part of. It's being put on by Turning Point USA, and he's stopping by the studio ahead of that. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what do you normally talk about when you do these speeches? I feel like, because I'm talking before you, and I haven't really figured out what I want to say yet, so I got to figure out what you're going to say.
Okay.
So I can steal it and then put you in a really tough spot.
Totally fair. What I normally talk about is, first of all, my experience after the shooting, what I've been doing now. And I really try to emphasize on what I had to go through after the shooting, the amount of media bias against me, what I witnessed firsthand in my attempts for lobbying, and how I really realized how I had to mature and gain a pragmatic approach to solving the school safety and school shooting epidemic. When I first came out of this, a lot of my peers were pushing for gun control, and I realized that it's not only not practical, it won't pass.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have passed with a Republican House or a Republican Senate. It especially wouldn't have got signed by the president. And also, what they were pushing was unconstitutional. An assault weapons ban is unconstitutional. And I realized that both it's unconstitutional, it wouldn't pass. What can I do that will actually solve this problem? Because, you know, we can all shout our partisan approaches, but if at the end of the day it doesn't get passed, it doesn't make a change, then what's the point? So I focus on those immediate safety changes that we can implement. And I fought hard, and then in March, I lobbied. I met with dozens of senators on both sides of the aisle, congressmen, I met with the president, VP, everyone who I could to get this bill passed. What it does, it was $2 billion for school safety,
mm-hmm.
and that made a change. So I talk about that. I talk about the Second Amendment, and I also talk about why you shouldn't feel bad to be a conservative on high school campuses. Because I think I have one of the most atrocious stories of bias and hatred at school. I mean, when I came out as conservative, I would get stare downs at schools. The average was like 20 a day.
Really?
20 a day. Two different times people threatened to beat me up just for being a conservative. My teachers were messing around with my grades. Some teacher purposely tried to give me like an 89.47 so I wouldn't get that 89.5, so I wouldn't get an A, so it would ruin my GPA, so I would drop down from being valedictorian to a different spot. So I face this, and then I tell the kids, look, I've had to go through this. I know the struggles. I know what you guys are going through, and it gets better. You can succeed. You will prevail. And don't be afraid to speak out on campus, or be a conservative.
I think I read somewhere that you weren't ever, at least at the time you gave the interview, you weren't a big gun fan. You didn't go shooting,
no,
but you were
no,
always still.
No. I never was a gun fan. I'm a gun policy fan. My dad
It's constitutional for you.
Yeah, yeah. My dad was in the special forces in Israel. So just a little backstory. But look, when we grew up, I never shot a gun before the shooting. I never touched a gun. I don't think I came close to a gun. But I realized the utility and the importance of having the Second Amendment, being able not only to defend yourself, but what happens when the population isn't armed. And it's having that long vision of understanding mm-hmm. that the first thing this isn't a conspiracy. Like people say this, it's not conspiratory. The first thing a tyrannical government does is it takes away the weapons and the ability to be armed of the individual. In Romania, in Cambodia, in Nazi Germany, Mao China, in Venezuela, the first thing a tyrannical government does when it's progressing towards tyranny and oppressing the people is taking away people's right to defend themselves.
Kyle Kashov in studio. If you want to see the speech tonight, it's absolutely free for Turning Point USA. Text the keyword tickets to 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link so you can register. Text tickets to 1-800-465-8770. Not only do you get to see Kyle speak, but you also get to hear me ramble on for about 15-ish minutes before he gets to talk. After what you experienced at Stoneman Douglas, how did you change politically? Did you become more passionate about your beliefs, or were you always this passionate?
So when I first started out, I was much less pro-gun than I was before. I saw my peers, and they're all pushing for gun control. I said, maybe some of the things that they're talking about is true. But then I looked into it. This is when we went up to Tallahassee right after the shooting. The Democratic congressmen and senators of Florida bust all these kids up to push and to kind of emotionally harass the Republican members to push for gun control. And I looked into this. In the beginning, I was like, okay, you know, maybe we'll raise the age from 18 to 21. And I looked into this and all those provisions, like, that won't change anything. Mm-hmm. That won't help. It'll actually be a detriment. It doesn't solve the problem you're trying to solve. It creates even more problems. It's like you'll get your emotional gratification of saying you did something. But at the end of the day, not only did you absolutely nothing, you hurt the people and you hurt the actual struggle for school safety. So I realized, I delved into this and I looked and I researched myself and I found that nothing they were proposing was going to work. And even more so, they had overshadowed. Look, people don't know. It has taken a year for anything of accountability to be implemented in Parkland. And that is because the gun control debate has overshadowed all the things that have happened. The biggest thing in Parkland that has been overshadowed by the gun control debate. And I said this the night of the shooting when I was in my bed. I had no idea. I saw 17 kids dead, and I said, this is quickly going to become a gun control debate. It's going to overshadow what happened and the real issues. There were 46 reports to the Broward Sheriff's Office, 2 tips to the FBI. The school board implemented a terrible policy. The Promise Program allowed this to occur. The superintendent had millions, tens of millions of funds for school safety, $100 million that they didn't put into the school. And only until a few days ago that Andrew Pollack had managed to get the governor to open a grand jury investigation, which is unlimited and basically full subpoena power. They look for crimes for the school board. And this should have been something immediately after the shooting. The only reason why that coward, Sheriff Israel, is no longer sheriff is because of Pollack. The real changes are happening on the ground because of Mr. Pollack and Ryan Petty, both of whom lost their daughters.
Well, and changes that you didn't need to create even new laws.
The biggest thing that I try to talk about is we can have all these phenomenal, you know, like supposedly effective gun control laws. But if the government isn't doing its job, then what's the point of those laws? We have laws that are pretty good currently on the books. But if the police aren't doing their job, if schools aren't doing the proper reporting, if these kids are allowed time and time again to have the same repeat offenses and aren't being thrust into the criminal justice system as they should be, nothing is being done. Yeah. The biggest issue why this occurred really is untold. It's because of the Promise Program. For people who don't know, the Promise Program allows students in school, they can have 3 repeat offenses for the same offense, and then they get thrown into the criminal justice system. The issue is, if let's say I hit you one time, but then another time I do a different offense, it counts as an entirely new offense. And even more so, every year it restarts.
Huh.
So these kids are never actually, nothing is ever done to them, and those who are bullied and traumatized can't do anything, and bullies are continued to roam around, and they're never actually, never actually disciplined. And that's the biggest thing for why this occurred, and even more so.
So this was preventable
Absolutely. I mean, the BSO, the Broward Sheriff's Office, knew that this kid was going to do this. There were two tips to the FBI. All the information was out there, and everyone dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm. And you say this kid. You don't use his name.
No. Okay. So I did an interview on CBS a few days ago, and they said his name on air, and I said, I would very much, you know, prefer that you not use his name, because statistically proven that giving them notoriety actually spurs more of these. Even more so, use that time to give notoriety to the people who should. Giving notoriety to these shootings is something that nobody should be doing. But even more so, this is what really, really annoyed me. There was the video of the shooter where he's basically saying why he was doing this, where he wants to be known as like the greatest killer. And then Time posted that video on YouTube and it got 2 million views.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking about wanting notoriety and all these media channels are giving it to him.
And you think that generally will spur other types of shootings? Because there's been debate as to whether or not any of that video should be made public at all.
I mean, it's been statistically proven that it's the reason why this occurs so often. Reason why like shootings spike up right after another shooting is because of the notoriety the shooter will receive.
It's Kyle Kashoff. He's in studio. He is promoting tonight's event. It's at 7:15 at Henry M. Jackson High School in Mill Creek. Both of us will be there speaking. He, of course, is the keynote address. He'll be talking about his experiences at Stoneman Douglas and what he's been working on since in the in way of getting some support for the Second Amendment. If you want to go to tonight's speech, absolutely free. You should bring your kids. If you don't have any, that's okay. You can show up as well. Text the keyword tickets to 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We're going to continue our conversation with Kyle Kashoff when we return right here. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. I am here in studio, Kyle Kashoff. He is in town for a speech tonight that we're both going to be delivering. I'm the warm-up act for Kyle, and then he's going to go. If you want to see the speech tonight at 7:15 at Henry M. Jackson High School in Mill Creek, text the keyword tickets to 1-800-465-8770. Now, obviously, you know, you've gone through something that few people will ever experience, and that's a positive for everybody else who doesn't have to experience a school shooting. And, you know, you acknowledge that you're obviously changed afterwards. And you made a point in the last segment about how some Democrats chose to essentially tokenize some of the pro-gun control students who were out there speaking, the ones we have seen on CNN and MSNBC ad nauseum. How do you make sure that you're not tokenized from conservatives to maybe exploit your position and your experience for the opposite of what the Democrats are doing?
Well, because everything I say, I haven't been coached. Nobody's telling me to say this. Everything I say is what I genuinely believe in. And, you know, there have been times where I've gone heavily against some of the things that the conservatives proposed. A lot of times conservatives will propose something and I'll say, yeah, that's great and I agree with you, but that's not something we should be focusing on legislatively because mm-hmm. that won't get passed. So everything I do is just what I genuinely believe is the right thing to do.
What did you see your pathway looking like before the shooting?
Well, so the thing with me is that, so actually I want to talk about, I was listening to what you said before about how the left tokenizes these shootings. And the best example for saying that's true is because when you look at what happened at Santa Fe, there was barely any media coverage. I wrote an article on this on the Daily Wire. And I said, why did Parkland get so much notoriety versus Santa Fe and other shootings? The reason is because Santa Fe was with a shotgun and a pistol. They couldn't have pushed for an assault weapons ban. They couldn't have pushed for high capacity magazine ban.
Mm-hmm.
There's no actual definition of whatever high capacity is. But yeah, and then you didn't see any of you saw barely any media coverage. None of the March kids. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think any of the March kids came down to Santa Fe. None of these celebrities who came to Parkland gave any attention to Santa Fe. And the reason is because it couldn't have been weaponized for gun control. So back to your question about I've grown. I've definitely matured a lot. I definitely have matured. And I've had to look at things more pragmatically and realistically. Like, I would love for there to be an armed guard per 1,000 students at every single school in the nation. Will that take a lot of work to get passed? Yes. Will it be passed in the next 10 years? Possibly. Will it get passed today in the immediate safety changes that we need? No. So what can I actually do that will solve the shooting? What can we get past immediately? And that's what we're focusing on.
So when you think about school shooters, do you view it as an epidemic or do you view it as something that's rare that we have to mitigate? Because statistically, obviously, it's rare. And that's a good thing, that it doesn't happen all that often. And part of the reason I would argue that we know who you are and we can name actual shooters and actual events is because it happens so rare, it really just jolts the entire nation. But do you view it as an epidemic?
That's a tough question. Statistically, it's going down, and that's a great thing, but it needs to be at zero. And until we get at zero, it's very much a huge issue for me. Making sure it gets to zero and that this never happens to another community, another family, ever again is why I fight. I mean, one of the biggest things why I've been so motivated to fight is I'm really close to Mr. Pollock and Mr. Petty. Lost their daughters. Mr. Pollock lost his daughter Meadow. Mr. Petty lost his daughter Elena. And the only thing they can do right now is, you know, their daughters are not coming back. All they can do now is act reactively and say, what can I do now to seek justice for my daughters? And also ensure that this, what I have to go through, doesn't happen to another family member. Like, they're fighting for all of us. And the biggest thing that I say is this. Don't be detached from reality. What happened at my school, that could have been your brother, your sister, your husband, your family relative. That could affect you because we all thought that Parkland was seemingly one of the better schools in the nation, security-wise. Mm-hmm. That's what we thought. I mean, it was an A-rated school. That's why a lot of people moved down to Parkland. And if it can happen at Parkland, it can most definitely happen to your community. So, you know, like, before this happens, like, your friends will make school shooting jokes and they'll say that, but, like, it can happen. And realize that and be rational enough and forward-thinking enough to act now to solve this issue before it affects your community. And that's the thing I talk to. That's the thing I talk about a lot because Mr. Pollock and Mr. Petty are fighting so everyone else doesn't have to go through what they mm-hmm. have to go through.
And yet they're fighting on behalf of one perspective, whereas you have others fighting on a different perspective, right? Going after gun control in a more meaningful way. Is it fair to assume you don't see any nefarious intent in some of your colleagues who are taking different positions than you?
Of course not.
So when you sit down and, you know, you think about the various perspectives out there, you've been able at least to find some common ground.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is that I've always, that's the first thing I want to come out. Straight out of the game in the shooting, I said, let's focus on the things that will actually, we can get past, that will solve this issue. Because I realize, like, gun control has gone nowhere for either side. It's 50-50. Like, the Republicans have the Senate now, the Dems have the House. Universal background checks, sure, they can get passed in the House. They're not getting passed in the Senate. So that wasted energy could be used towards something that, you know, can get passed.
So what's something right now that individual states can do that might mitigate the threat of this happening again?
Making sure that first of all, getting rid of the promise program. Horrendous. And making sure that law enforcement does their job.
Or letting them do their job.
Yeah, allowing them not only to do their job, but the reason why I'm so hard on Sheriff Israel, you know, what he did before the shooting, what he did after the shooting was despicable. But before the shooting, what I really, really dislike is that he specifically changed the wording. So when there is a school shooter, he changed it from shall to may. So the coward Scott Peterson, who was the school resource officer, legally wasn't forced to enter. And that's why seven additional students died. Had he done his job, those people would have lived. And making sure we have the proper policies. Look, there's one thing that we can all agree upon is that we need to make it extremely hard for a potential shooter to enter the building. The biggest thing about this is that it's a deterrent. We have to make sure that we establish these deterrents so that a target isn't illuminated. So the reason why I'm against gun-free zones, and I realize that this won't happen for a couple of years, it won't get banned, but that it illuminates a target when a shooter, like 97.3% of all mass public shootings occur in gun-free zones.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that the target is actually hardened is a really good deterrent. At Douglas right now, security hasn't budged an inch at all. I can still hop the fence. It's like 4 feet tall. They didn't change the fencing at all. There's not a single point entry. It's completely relaxed. They don't check bags. There are no metal detectors. all the policies that the school board proposed, the school board hasn't acted on a single one of them. The school is still unsafe. And if this is the case with Parkland, then look at every other school.
So last question for you. Maybe it's the toughest. I oftentimes hear victims of crimes come out and say they have forgiveness. Do you have forgiveness for the shooter,
no.
for the school resource officer?
Oh,
for the sheriff,
for the shooter?
For everybody.
No.
What's your level of... So,
no.
What do you do with that?
Hold them accountable. Hold them accountable.
You want to hear Kyle Kashov speak tonight, 7:15, Henry M. Jackson High School in Mill Creek. It's absolutely free, but you do have to register online. Text the keyword TICKETS to 1-800-465-8770. You've been listening to The Jason Rance Show. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.